guys set aside a lot of permits where guys can come and pay $5 and put in for these.
Everybody's on the same playing field, you know. Everybody's name's in the hat.
The Built to Hunt podcast is brought to you by the Hunt Advisors of the Hunt and Fool magazine. We're dedicated to helping hunters dream, plan, and hunt. Join Hunt and Fool today.
Welcome to a special edition of the Built to Hunt podcast. We're coming at you here from the Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City, Utah, at the Salt Palace. It's one of our favorite shows of the year. I'm Austin Atkinson, here with Hunt Advisor Robert Hanneman and our special guest, John Bear. Thanks for being here today, John.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
So, John, we want you to tell us a little bit about yourself to introduce you. Everybody knows your voice. They've seen you here at the Expo, but tell us a little bit of your story.
Well, I grew up down in San Pete County, down in Manti. Dad worked on a sheep ranch most of my life. He's also a diesel mechanic, so kind of a blue-collar farming background. Grew up hunting and fishing and just love the outdoors, and it's just been a huge part of my life. I currently live in Springville. Married, three kids. My day job, I'm an electrician, and then seems like this time of year I spend most of my time doing what you boys do, chasing these shows. I do a lot of auctioneering at these shows and also heavily involved with conservation organizations, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, and just a lot of work like that. So,
you're currently the vice president?
Yes, I'm currently the vice president of SFW, yes, sir.
Awesome. Great organization that helps put on this show in conjunction with the Mule Deer Foundation.
Yep, we're partners with the Mule Deer Foundation. I believe this is 13 years now that we're partners with them, and it's, you know, it's grown into quite the partnership, because on one hand, you kind of think you're competitors, but in reality, we all want the same thing. We all want more wildlife, more opportunity, better herds, healthier herds, and, you know, to protect and shore up our hunting and outdoor tradition. And so when you look at big picture and kind of a broader perspective, you know, the Mule Deer Foundation, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife have accomplished something that is really unique, where we've been able to come together and really accomplish a lot of great things.
You know, and often this expo and the conservation permits, which we're going to touch on, has been highly criticized, but I always thought it's because it's not understood properly. Utah, to me, is at the forefront of conservation and raising funds and doing projects, and that in turn means more tags for our members and for hunters that want to hunt.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you, hunting, it's hard to sit down and talk to somebody that has a different opinion about whether it's permits, whether it's opportunity versus quality, whether it's archery muzzleloader versus rifle, because everybody has what they love. Everybody's passion is a little different. Mm-hmm. So who's wrong? You know, is anybody really wrong, or is it just a matter of us sitting down and be able to come together and find some common ground? So when we talk about conservation permits, some people are just totally opposed to the thought of auctioning a permit. And now
they think it's a rich man's
sport. Yeah, they do. And I hear that a lot. And now I obviously have a little different perspective on that from several viewpoints, I guess. I'm the auctioneer. And
well, once you see where the money goes, it makes you feel
And I'm
better.
Also, exactly. And I'm also heavily involved with where that money goes and how it's spent. Now, Utah, and I'm just speaking for Utah, Utah does more conservation work than the rest of the country combined. And that's just a fact. And does it come at a cost? Yes, it absolutely does. It's extremely expensive. And we sell conservation permits, a percentage of permits from these units, whether it's deer, elk, antelope, you know, we sell some bighorn sheep permits. That money goes back on the ground. And because of that money, like I said, we're able to do more conservation work than the rest of the country combined. Now, some people say, well, I still don't like it. I'm just opposed to it. Well, that's your opinion, and that's fine. I have a different opinion. I'm very proud of what we've been able to do. You can't drive anywhere in this state and not see where we've chained, where we've bull hogged, where we've put in guzzlers, where we've transplanted deer, where we've transplanted bighorn sheep, turkeys, mountain goats, and the list is very long and very impressive, but there's also a big price tag that goes with it, and if we're going to do it, we got to pay for it.
You know, one of the things I like about it is, you know, you can hear those guys, and we get those phone calls all the day. It's like, it's a rich man's game. Well, honestly, you guys set aside a lot of permits where guys can come and pay $5 and put in for these. it's not like every single tag is auctioned off. I mean, there's other opportunities for guys to get tags through raffles, through all other things.
You know, and you bring up a great point. A lot of people confuse the conservation permits with the expo permits. The expo permits are 200 permits that are set aside to come. You apply, you can apply online and then come validate here. Those are $5 to apply. If you draw, you pay the permit fee. All that money goes back to, all the permit fee money goes back to the Division of Wildlife. The application fee the expo partners use for conservation projects, and that's been under scrutiny for a few years, and I think that the partners have done a lot better job telling that story and showing transparency to where that money goes, and you know, that's all part of the process. The conservation permits, you know, are totally different, and those are, we are sacrificing those permits to the money gods to raise money for conservation. Now, I struggle a little bit when people say, well, you know, you're turning it into a rich man's game by selling a permit for however much money. You know, I've bought a couple conservation permits. I bought an antelope tag for $1,500 one night in an auction that I was doing because it was going cheap, and I just kept kicking the ring man in front of me when I wanted to bid. And, you know, I thought, I just paid $1,500 for an antelope tag. What in the world is wrong with me? Well, then I went out and got in my $40,000 truck and turned on my $800 radio and went home and, you know, and went out and fed my $3,000 horse. And I thought, you know, in perspective, is it really a rich man's game?
Well, you think about it, too. Yeah. It's like you could have got a couple $100 tag in Wyoming, but you're going to be end up more than $1,500
if you go do that. You know, I drew a tag in Colorado that cost me, you know, whatever Colorado tag costs you these days, a high country buck hunt. I took 2 weeks off of work. I bought new tires for my truck, new tires for my four-wheeler. I bought a new pair of binoculars, and I bought a new gun. I wish the tag was the expensive part of it. Now, you know, so we kind of got to look at it in perspective. I think the people that say we're turned into a rich man's game, I'm not saying they're not entitled to their opinion. I'm not saying that at all. I do think that if you sit down and look at where the money goes, the good that's done with it, I think it's more than worth it. I think it's more than worth it. Now, I'm glad that there's somebody with that money that is willing to reinvest it back into to wildlife. Do they get a hunt more often than I do on some of these units? Absolutely. Am I glad they're putting that money back into hunting and conservation as opposed to a lot of people that put it into anti-hunting movements or other green movements that are working to lock up public land or chip away at our hunting rights or our Second Amendment rights? I mean, those guys are still hunters, and they're still on our side, and I'm glad that they're willing to put their money where they're putting it.
Exactly, and I think that's kind of misunderstood. We did a podcast before about governor tags specifically and statewide tags, which most hunters are familiar with, mm-hmm. but states will auction off these governor tags. But just to clarify, these conservation tags, Utah still has the governor type
statewide
tags. Yep, we
still have governor tags, yep.
They're going to be very expensive. But all these conservation tags, like your point on the antelope, are considerably cheaper.
You know, they are, and the price goes up and down. I kind of have a unique perspective, I think, on how units are doing because of the price of the tag.
Well, what's alive on that unit right now?
Exactly, because a lot of times, like, if the outfitters have been out scouting that unit and they've hunted it for a few years and it's trending down, they're not going to pay $50,000 for that tag, and that tag's right. going to drop considerably. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting to watch that. And then you look at the harvest date and you see, well, yeah, that unit's trending down. And the outfitters have known it for several years, and the guys that have been hunting it because the price of the tags dropped. Yeah. And if all of a sudden two guys show up in an auction and the price of one tag goes through the roof, you know there's some guys watching something super big on that unit, and they're after it. And what's really cool is when once in a while a local kid from wherever, small town Utah, also knows that big buck or that big bull's there, and it shows up on his Instagram story in spite of the fact somebody just paid $60,000 to try to shoot that. And I've seen that more than once, too. So
what percentage of the tags go to conservation tags? How does Utah break that down?
We break them down. So if say there's 100 tags on a unit, these groups can go in and apply for these tags, and there's a maximum number of permits that can go to conservation permits. It's either 8 permits or 5% of the tags on the unit, whichever is less. So now I'm bad at math, so I'm not going to try to break that down for each unit and tell you exactly. But a lot of the units, the smaller units, there'll be one or two tags. Some of the bigger units, the Manti, the Wasatch, some of those units, you'll have a few more tags. But, yeah, it's 5% or 8 permits, whichever is less. And they apply every 3 years, and then there's a few tags that you can apply for every year for some of the smaller groups. They're a group that might just be getting started up and didn't make the application period. There's some permits that are available every year that somebody can apply for.
And it's interesting to me. I mean, you can a lot of these are exactly like the permit, and they follow the season dates. This isn't have any special privileges for most of these tags.
Yeah, no, they are when you if you come in and buy a permit, you're buying a like a Manti archery elk tag or a Manti. If you buy the any weapon, you can choose the early, the mid-season, any weapon that we have now, or the late, if there's a late hunt on there. You know, if you're buying the muzzleloader, you're buying the muzzleloader. And you're and you're hunting with everybody else, which, you know, it's, yeah, there's no special season dates or anything like that. You're hunting with everybody else. But, you know, I'm not going to lie to you and say that it's, that process is appealing to everybody. It's not. And there's times where, you know, I have to sit back and think, is it worth the price we're paying? Is it worth the tags we're giving up? Obviously, every time I've looked at it and thought about that, I think, you know, hands down, absolutely, because of what we've been able to accomplish in the state. So,
yeah, because it can be frustrating for a non-resident looking at a lot of these units saying there's only one tag available to me, so now it's going to go to the random draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know,
when he's sitting on max sheep points.
Yeah. And you know, one thing about Utah, if you look at Colorado, Wyoming, some of these other states, they have more non-resident tags percentage-wise than Utah does. Utah has usually percentage-wise, what are we, 10%? Usually 10% non-resident tags. But the price of our resident permits is pretty high. So some states sell more non-resident tags for the revenue and keep the resident prices low. Utah charges our residents quite a bit and keeps the number of non-resident tags lower. And so it's a trade-off. It is. If I was a non-resident wanting to hunt Utah, I can see their concern.
Yeah.
Where I live in Utah, I might not be as worried about it, but I see where they're coming from.
But to the whole point of if we don't have the money to do the treatments, to do the conservation, they're not going to have the animals anyway, there's no tags.
And I'll tell you, let's look specifically at like the bighorn sheep. I don't know anybody in the world that hunts that, you know, the western U.S. or anywhere that doesn't want to hunt bighorn sheep. There was a time in Utah where we had 6 or 7 permits. So we took one or two of those tags and says, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to sell them. That's going to generate this much money. Then we're going to go to Montana, Alberta, a few other places. We're going to get some sheep. We're going to catch some sheep on these units here. We have all this habitat. We're going to start planting sheep. Well, now we're up to, I don't even know how many sheep tags. A lot.
A lot.
Well, I've never said there's a lot of sheep tags. I shouldn't say that.
So I remember
there's more. There's a lot more than what we used to have.
Because
so.
You guys got a bunch of your sheep from like the Nebo came from the Thompson Falls area in Montana.
Yep.
You got the Montana genetics down there.
Yep. And, you know, we've just had kind of everybody's all worked up about the disaster on Antelope Island where we had the Californians get mycoplasma out there and they're dying off and we've been out there shooting them so that we can clean the island off. Well, now we've been thinking, you know what? We had the Californians. We have lots of Californians. And I'm talking the sheep, not the Californian people. We got plenty of those, too. But let's look at going to Montana and getting some of these 200-inch sheep genes. And let's make a nursery herd on the island with some giant, giant sheep. So is it sad? Yes, that those sheep out there died. Is it a new opportunity to grow even a better herd with some lessons learned so we don't have that kind of disaster again? Absolutely. And so now we're actually kind of excited at the possibilities there.
That's good.
And so if you look at the sheep situation in Utah, that is an absolute direct effect of conservation money and conservation permits. And we have a full-time sheep biologist. We have our predator management is is way better than what it used to be. I mean, we can really concentrate on sheep areas where we're having, you know, predation issues. And our sheep story is a huge success because of conservation permit dollars. Our mountain goat story is the same way. Our turkeys are the exact same story.
Yep.
I mean, 20 years ago, I drew a turkey permit and thought, holy cow, you know, I may never draw another one. Well, now you can buy them over the counter. And it's because conservation organizations using conservation dollars to transplant, to feed, to do habitat projects. And now my kids can go turkey hunting with an over-the-counter permit. I mean, it's a success story. It is an absolute success story. And it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of money, but that's why we do it. So.
Yep, and without money, it goes away.
That's
we
right.
just can't
that's
do
right.
it.
That's right. Everything we do has a price. And, you know, I guess we have to ask ourselves every day, is it worth the cost? And like I said, every time I've sat down and really thought about it and been challenged on it or questioned about it, you know, absolutely it's worth it. So.
Now, this Hunt Expo here in February, this is kind of the kickoff, if you will, to a lot of the banquets where these are going to be sold. Mm-hmm. Explain how these tags are divided up between different chapters. I mean, if I'm a listener and I say, I want to go buy a Poncegon deer tag, how do I buy it? Where do I go?
If you want to buy a Poncegon deer tag, what you would do is you would you could contact, you know, any of the organizations that you want to buy from. Usually go on the website, SFW, we have them all listed on our website. How we do is we break it down, all of our banquets, and then we list all the tags that are for sale at that banquet. And I have people all the time call me, hey, when is the, you know, the Poncegon tag for sale? When is the Pavon elk tag coming up for sale? Do you have this tag? Do you have that tag? And sometimes, you know, these groups bid on these tags, and I'll have to tell them, well, we don't have that tag this year. The MDF has it, or the RMEF has it. And so give them the contact information there. And, you know, a lot of times they'll show up to the banquet, or one of their buddies will show up and buy it for them. But or bid on it for them. And
it's a little nerve-wracking. I've been on some super high dollar tags, and when they're like $200,000, you raise your hand, you get a little,
I could show you some text threads from guys that whoever's in on the tag, they think you're waiting like hours and hours and hours to drop the hammer and sell the tag. They think you're just milking it and trying to give the other guy the opportunity. If you're the guy that's not in and it's coming down to the point, they think, you know, that you're just super fast on the hammer and you're trying to give it to the other guy and you're not giving him enough time. And I mean, I have those conversations every day with guys, but if you want to get in on tag, get in on the website. Ours is sfw.net, you know, MDF or muledeerfoundation.org, and just get on there, look up their conservation permits. It'll say what they have, when they're for sale. And they'll give you a contact of who to call if you're interested, if you have questions about the permit, about the dates, about what it's sold for in the past. And, you know, of course, the more information you put out there, the more people are educated. And, of course, that helps sure. everybody. So we try to be as upfront with all that as we can.
Now, if you're not here at the expo or you're not going to these banquets, are almost all of these sold on the website onlinehuntingauctions.com? Can you view those on there? Are you familiar with how that works?
You know what? I am not really familiar with that because – I'm always there, so.
Yeah. But online bids are available on a lot of these.
Yeah, well, here at the expo. Oh, you mean here at the expo.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I'm with you now.
So you have guys in the room bidding.
Yes, guys online bidding. You'll have guys on the phone bidding. You'll have guys in the room bidding, and you can go to the online and sign up, and you can watch the auction, and you can sit there and bid. And as those bids come up, there's a girl that sits right in front of me on the computer. I've worked with her for years and years. She's solid as a rock. I mean, she's super good at her job. And I can see those bids, you know, coming up. And I can see when everybody online's dropped out. I can see when all my ring men in the room are got their light down and their hand down and they're giving me the we're done. And one hand will be in the air or it'll be online. And you drop the hammer and that's it. So, yeah, the online auction for here at the expo, yeah, it works. It works great. It's super secure, and we've used it for years. I used it in the sheep show last year. I mean, I sold a couple tags for over $100,000 to people online, you know. So
wow.
Yep. In fact, sometimes some guys, because they don't want their buddies to know they're bidding, will register online, sit in the back on their phone and bid online so they don't have to hold up their hand.
So they're sitting to see.
Yep, they're sitting in the room watching the auction live, bidding online. In fact, that actually happens quite a bit.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, that way you don't draw any attention to yourself.
I always get a kick out of it when you got two guys bidding for the same guy and don't realize it.
You know, and I try to keep them straight if I think they're bidding against themselves or bidding against each other, but sometimes they're way in the back of the room, and it's not my fault if they're bad with their money. So, you know, I try not to – I say that. That's a joke. I try not to – I try to be as absolute honest as you can be, because the auction is part of the process.
Sure.
And if it's not a good, honest auction, they don't trust you. That reflects poorly on the process. So,
do you ever get stressed? I mean, this is a personal question. Do you get nervous? How do you handle the stress of going to this auction?
Well, and that's a great question. Let me paint a little picture for you here, okay? So we've worked for 13 years putting it together, right? We've got Robert O'Neill coming tonight to speak. You know, the governor's going to be here. Ted Nugent will be walking around. Junior will be walking around. You got all the big names from the industry. You got Hunt and Fool here. You got, you know, everything. So you get all these people in the room. We've worked hard to get all the tags there together. You know, all this stuff. You got a concert. You got all this entertainment. Just everybody's putting years' work to get all this together. Then they hand you the microphone, send you out on the stage, and they say, all right, this is all we want. We want every dollar you can get. We want you to hurry. Don't make anybody mad. Don't screw anything up. Don't get us sued. And we want all these people to walk out of here entertained, happy, and ready to come back next year. Go. So now, is that pressure?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pressure.
It's a lot of weight on your shoulders.
But I'm here to tell you, it's the funnest couple hours of my year.
Wow.
I think about it every day, all year long. I love it. And like last week at the Sheep Show, it's the same thing. When the Arizona tag comes up, the sheep tag comes up, which was the high tag the year before. I mean, because the room's just buzzing and everybody's watching everybody to see who's been what. And it's fun, and it's a lot of pressure. And I mean, the state's there to watch and make sure everything's good. And you know, they're dependent on that money, and it's a lot of pressure. And do you get nervous? If you don't get nervous, you better check and make sure you still got a pulse. But it's a blast.
Highest tag you've sold, dollar-wise? Montana sheep?
Montana sheep, I think it was 8 years ago in Reno, I sold the Montana sheep tag for $480,000. And I mean, and when things start getting crazy high like that, you start thinking – I'm saying it right? Know what I'm selling,
I'm
right?
There's not
a screw up here, right? You know, because I kept telling the guy, okay, we're on the Montana sheep tag, and you're in at $480,000. And he just kept going, yep. And so, you know, you make dang good sure everybody's on the same page where you say sold on that one. And, you know, I've sold a bunch of them for close to 400, over 300. And you just got to – You just get, before you say sold, because when you say sold, I mean, that's a contract, you know, that's a contract. So before you say sold, you just make sure they know they're in, that you know they're in, that the people, that everybody's okay, and that there's no questions. And that's a lot of money, and anybody with that kind of money is a good businessman, and they're usually a pretty shrewd businessman, and they don't screw around. And it's serious. It's pressure, but at the same time, it's a riot, man. I love it. So wouldn't want to do anything else.
Well, we sure appreciate you sharing that information with us and spending some time with us today. We know it's a busy schedule for you. You got the lunch ladies auction coming up soon, and then all these other big auctions.
Yeah, we got the ladies luncheon. My buddy Mike Lauder with the Mule Deer Foundation is going to be the auctioneer at the ladies luncheon. I'm going to be in doing the day auction. It starts at noon here in the ballroom, and we'll sell some tags there. And then tonight at 7 o'clock, the big banquet starts, and we're going to start selling the big stuff, and it's going to be fun. So
that's good.
So I got to change the subject real quick. I know you're busy doing this, and you're going around all the SFW banquets and stuff like that, and I know you're a coyote hunter at heart. How many days a year do you still get out and do that?
I'm sure
it's not enough.
You know, every year I think I'm going to schedule less auctions and less work, and I'm going to get out more. And it always goes the other way. So I don't know how many days I hunted last year, to be honest with you. We had a really good fall. I didn't have really any big deer elk tags or anything like that. So I, went to Georgia hunting coyotes. I went to Montana hunting coyotes. I went to, where'd we go? We filmed a couple shows for Fox Pro in Alberta. I spent a week in Colorado where my family's from out there. And so, yeah, I don't know.
The prices are up now, $100 for Montana coyotes this year.
Well, yeah. I was actually hunting Montana in July. So those, so
a little different up
they
there.
Yeah, we got some decoy dogs we use. And, you know, it's a whole new ball game when you use dogs. And we hunt them in the spring and the summer with the dogs. We try to get on the fawning grounds and do some of that. So, yeah, but I don't know if it probably would not be wise for me to count that up because that might work against me.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good. So all of you listeners, if you've never been to the Hunt Expo, if you've never sat in an auction with the John Bear, you are missing out. It's fun, it's exciting, and there's tags here you can win that you have to come to validate your entries. You need to be here.
Yeah, I would hope everybody would come down and take that opportunity, because if you have drawn a once in a lifetime tag, that doesn't apply here. I mean, you can still apply for that once-in-a-lifetime tag here. The waiting period does not apply. I mean, it's a true lottery as far as there's no bonus points, no preference points. So I guess it's not. I shouldn't say it's a true lottery, especially out here in Utah. But everybody's on the same playing field. You know, everybody's name's in the hat. So come
just
on down.
Just once. You can't put your name anymore once. Yep. There's some non-resident only tags.
Yep, there is some non-resident only tags. You know, come on down. Come on down. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, I've been the lucky guy before. Now, of course, where I'm an officer with one of the organizations, I'm not eligible anymore to play that game. So, but I'm here to tell you, lightning does strike, and when it does, it's pretty fun. So,
it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
No, and they say it's the best hunting expo in the West, but I'm here to tell you it's the best hunting expo in the country or in the world. It's pretty fun. The show's bigger than it's ever been, and if you're not here, you're crazy. You're missing out.
It's my favorite week of the year, and I have some pretty good weeks, so yeah, it's my favorite week of the year.
Well, thanks, John, for spending time with
us
today.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Appreciate what you do. Love how your business is going. You guys do a great job, so thank you very much for having me.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks.